nice way to spend a holiday weekend, yeah? Chanting with devotees. Getting the transmittal message of Srimad Bhagavatam with devotees, taking prasadam with devotees. Think of all the things that people are doing over their holiday and running around. This is very nice. The Bhagavatam verse that describes with each passing day the materialist is drawn one step closer to death, but with each passing day the transcendentalist is drawn one step closer to back home, back to Godhead. And not only we're going back to Godhead, but we're going with a whole wonderful group of souls dancing back in Gaya. Kevala Ananda Kanda. Foundation. So we ended yesterday with text 15 from chapter 4. I want to cover a little bit more from chapter 15. And 16. Sukadeva Goswami, we were discussing, even amongst the disciples of Vyas, Sukadeva Goswami was considered the most qualified person. Therefore, he received this Srimad Bhagavatam, that the responsibility of the disciples of Vyasa who are looking after the four Vedas, and also the Smriti literature, the Itihasas and Puranas. It was their responsibility to preserve that knowledge, and to preserve that knowledge is, you know, you can put it on your hardware, put it on your hard drive. You can memorize the thing, but it's not just memorize the thing, it's assimilate the thing. Because when transcendental knowledge is spoken, just as Krishna indicates in Bhagavad Gita, the Tattvadarshi can awaken that realization in the heart. Because it's not just knowledge, it's transcendental realization. The next purport Prabhupada is going to speak about this confidential knowledge, more confidential knowledge, most confidential knowledge. And those stages of, he doesn't delineate it, but it's in Bhagavad Gita. Confidential knowledge is knowledge of the soul. Lots of people know about the soul, but how many people have realization of the soul or act in the consciousness that they're spirit soul? I endlessly marvel at how many people believe in the soul and how many people don't act that way. How many churches and places of worship there are all over the place, and how many people are living lives that are dissonant with that message. To build those places, they make sacrifice. Gorgeous churches, so on, and so many of them. But the quality of life is dissonant with the message. Anyway, so it's confidential. It's an open secret. Your spirit, soul. But then, how to live that way? So, more confidential knowledge is understanding of the Supreme Soul. Because the second chapter is the soul distinct from the body. work in confidential knowledge is the Supreme Soul. Just like this conversation I mentioned yesterday with this woman who was in transit through Midway Airport on the way to the Festival of Inspiration, and you know, a smart lady, well-educated lady, and you know, a religious lady, religious person, and open and to the understanding that, that God is within, just somehow it's a nice idea that just didn't click. And so the discussion was, it's not just like, you know, a figure of speech, God is within. So she asked, does that mean the soul? God is within. Does your religion believe that you're God, and because the soul is within? God is within. So it's not just a figure of speech, or as this other conversation I relayed, this energy that's everywhere, a energy force. It's a form of God within, Paramatma. You know, for devotees it's elementary, but for some people, even the conception is something that, like a rubber ball hitting a wall, it just bounces. It doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't enter. And then the most confidential knowledge is to act in the relationship of the individual soul with the Supreme Soul. And that's a novel idea. But to do it, you know, in external activities, and to internalize that relationship, that's the most confidential knowledge. It's where the whole of Bhagavad Gita is heading to, where the whole of spiritual understanding leads to, or knowledge leads to, is the relationship with Krishna. Like, the discussion we had last night with the lady who has a Christian background, it may have been helpful for you to see how that dialogue proceeds when you do have encounters, because all of you, Krishna willing, will try to give Krishna consciousness to other people, and Krishna willing, it won't be just to non-resident Indians now in America. It'll be to Americans in America. And when you meet Americans in America and you get into some dialogue like that, you'll have some idea how to address, because you have some idea how to address, you know, non-resident people that have grown up in India, their way of worship, and then going on to worship of Krishna. You know where the attachment points are. And so from another tradition, what the attachment points are. But conceptually, there's agreement that there's God. But now how do you handle that? What do you do with that information? How do you live your life according to that information, that conception that there's a personal God, energy force? It's not personal. Although, and Prabhupada comments about this in the purport, next purport. I'll read it. I'm ahead of myself, but the touched on some very important points, the message here. Prabhupada speaks of personal worship of a form of the Lord, or one may impersonally offer the Lord devotional prayers in a mosque or a church, or for that matter, a temple. most confidential knowledge, the most confidential part of confidential knowledge, is the relationship of loving exchange with the personality of Godhead. And it's an exchange, it's an offering of service and the reciprocation of loving assistance that Krishna supplies to his devotee to essentially accept him in that relationship. Which means not just that, you know, he takes us out of our troubles and he gives us the ability to sing or dance or write or do something. Those things happen, but that's incidental. That's what the message previously was. Krishna's delivering to his worshiper the things that they approach him for. And even those who are inimical to him, to deliver them from their complication with the involvement of material energy equally kindly. And then those who are the transcendentalists, the worshippers of the impersonal feature of the Lord, he delivers them to the Brahmajyoti, and those who are worshippers of his personal feature, and he delivers them to their appropriate Vaikuntha planet and with appropriate form. And all of those Jiva Goswami indicates that's the lesser part of it. It's not the essential part. The essential part of what the Lord does is the loving reciprocation. And somehow people have a hard time making that connection. Because so many reasons, but we're conditioned to fruitive mentality and mental speculation, and so relationship just doesn't connect. But it is the essence. It is the essence. The essence of the service that we render is the relationship. And the relationship means it's a two-way relationship. Krishna reciprocates loving exchange with his devotee. So, this is what Shukadeva Goswami is indicating. Maharaj Pariksit asked about the creative process. And Shukadeva Goswami is going to explain the creative process. But just contemplating the Supreme Lord, who for the conditioned soul's perverted desires makes the arrangement for creation, which is inconceivable and fantastic and merciful. He just speaks about the essence of this merciful personality. These are not the core essential things. Even with the process of creation, it's the relationship of the Supreme Lord with those spirit souls and his external energy that's, we've been saying, under remote control. It's the relationship. And Krishna consciousness is to awaken that relationship. Or the Bhagavatam, by Vyasadeva's expert literary composition, is leading us into a deeper sense of that relationship. Even when talking about creation, it's relationship. It's really sublime. Truly sublime. He's not even like subtly reading between the lines. I remember hearing that phrase when I was a young student. What does that mean, read between the lines? But it's an unspoken message, and you're supposed to, by metaphor or simile, you're supposed to understand, you know, the hidden message that's behind the message. But Shukadeva Goswami is just laying it out. This Supreme Lord that you're asking about how he does this creation, he's so wonderful. just to meditate upon him. He's in ecstasy, glorifying, offering prayers to that Supreme Lord who does this creative activity. So text 15, the text again, was, let me again offer my respectful obeisances unto the all-auspicious Lord Sri Krishna, about whom glorification, remembrances, audience, prayers, hearing, and worship can at once cleanse the effects of all sins of the performer. So, as I mentioned yesterday, this is proof from one who knows it, the statement that Krishna is fully transcendental, and topics about Krishna are none different than him, they're fully transcendental. And taking up the process of speaking about and glorifying him, it's fully transcendental. Krishna and the process to connect with him is fully transcendental. And anyone who is somehow, by good fortune, comes in contact with Krishna or the process to connect with Krishna, they're put in an elevator and fast speed, they're right to the top floor. Purification. But not just, so, it's beyond dharma, artha, kama, moksha, in other words. And that was stated previously about Maharaj Parikshit by Sutta Goswami, that he gave such focus of shelter in the personality of Godhead, he abandoned any consideration of dharma, artha, and kama, and moksha. Who cares a fig for such things? And the processes that help one get to those places. So it's not above the Vedas, which speak of dharma, artha, kama, moksha. It's the essence of them is the ripened fruit of them. This is the goal. And this process of Krishna Kathamritam at once takes one to that goal. Not like, it's the process is gradual because we're attached. But the potency is there at once to take one there. At once. And Prabhupada emphasizes this in the purport as it's mentioned in the verse. Even the very sound of the holy name of Krishna or Rama can at once surcharge the atmosphere spiritually. Just a little anecdote. I was thinking what Jagatananda and Ananda Vrindavan are going to feel after the weekend. Taking pictures so we can look at it, but the experience of all the devotees chanting together, hearing together and serving together, it surcharges the atmosphere, and then it'll be like a vacuum after everybody's, after the weekend is over. I had the experience of visiting a family's home. I forget that Daga, I think, is their last name. For a number of years, the Daga family in New Jersey congregation have held a 24-hour kirtan in their home once a year. They start on a Saturday at noon, they end on a Sunday at noon, and 24-hour kirtan. So, can't remember exactly how it worked out, but they moved from the house that they had done this for years in, so the one that they did in their new house was really well attended because it was like a housewarming along with the 24-hour kirtan. They told me later that a new house, with they had a maid, like, you know, a house cleaning lady. And because the husband and wife, they go out and work, they pay for the house, so they're, you know, the mortgage. So when they came back, it was Monday afternoon, Monday after work. They came back and the house cleaning lady was, she'd never had, it was a new lady. She never met the family. It was, you know, a new person. And she was singing Hare Krishna. And they asked her, you know, where'd you learn this? She said, I don't know. It just started, I felt so good. And this just started saying these words. And I don't, you know, I don't know. The spiritual vibration. So what to speak of, let's say, you know, a holy place like Vrindavan, where Krishna performed his pastimes and devotees for generations and centuries, decades have been chanting Krishna's holy name and serving Krishna. There's, when you visit 26 Second Avenue, where Prabhupada began the Hare Krishna movement, and you know, the walls vibrate, you feel the spiritual potency. Just like, you know, the Sangha of Vaishnavas, the whole atmosphere becomes surcharged, just as Prabhupada is saying here. The very sound of the holy name of Lord Krishna and Ram can at once surcharge the atmosphere spiritually. We must know definitely that the Lord is present wherever such pure transcendental service is performed, and thus the performer of offenseless kirtan has positive association with the Lord. So that's like, that's, it's the message of the most confidential knowledge, entering into, or at least having the opportunity for, a relationship at once, qualified, unqualified, at once, opportunity is there. And then how do we deal with that opportunity? There's a whole range of how we might deal with that opportunity. There's a sentence in the introduction to Bhagavad Gita that I refer to so many times, but I really, really like it. Can someone take a Bhagavad Gita off the shelf and pass it forward? Prabhupada writes something that, the Bhagavad Gita was spoken by Lord Krishna to remind people, essentially, remind people of what they've forgotten. It's not new knowledge, it's standard knowledge. It's knowledge that's already within. Pages so many times. Lord Krishna descends specifically to reestablish the real purpose of life when man forgets that purpose. Here it is, relationship with Krishna. Confidential, more confidential, most confidential. The real purpose of life, when man forgets that purpose. Even then, out of many, many human beings who are awakened, yes, relationship with Krishna, that's the purpose. Out of many, many such persons who awaken, there may be one who actually enters into the spirit of understanding his position. And for him, this Bhagavad Gita is spoken. So, that's what I'm this morning's class is dedicated to that message. We're all rendering devotional service, but what is really wanted is to enter into the spirit of that understanding that our purpose is to reestablish our relationship with Krishna, and it's not just behaviors and restrictions and activities and performances. It's the relationship with Krishna. Entering into the spirit of that relationship with Krishna. This is the most confidential part of the most confidential knowledge. And for this, Bhagavad Gita is spoken, and for this, Srimad Bhagavatam is further spoken. It's the graduate study of the message of Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada continues, similarly, remembrance and prayers also can give us the desired result if they are done properly under expert guidance. So that's an important if. Again, so many people believe in the soul. Of course, they have very interesting, diverse conceptions of what the soul is. But some idea of what is the soul. And now how to act that way. How to live your life practically that way. There's some indication in scriptures and more definitive indications in further scriptures. But then it's not just information, it's application of that information, and it's more than just application, it's the relationship that's the essence. The relationship with Krishna is assisted by, and is a requirement, that there's relationship with those who have relationship with Krishna. That's Krishna's system. That's how one has relationship with Krishna. Like sometimes Prabhupada was approached, and there was a specific incident, one amongst many, but one that I'm aware of, where Prabhupada was approached in Hawaii, and there was a time when there was a splinter group, and Prabhupada was approached saying, "Srila Prabhupada, we love you very much, but..." "And some of the members of ISKCON don't represent you very well." And Prabhupada's, just making a long discussion very short, the essence of Prabhupada's reply was, "You love me, you love ISKCON, because ISKCON is my creation." Now, like his spiritual family. And that makes a big responsibility on the part of members of ISKCON or followers of Prabhupada to represent him well. But as a loving father, he was helping us to grow to the position where we're properly representing him. And that is our responsibility on the others, this relationship. It's our responsibility to properly represent him. Not just in the words that we say or the words of Bhagavad Gita as it is, but our character and our conduct and the qualities that we carry represent him. So fewer and fewer persons would say, "You know, Swamiji or Prabhupada, I love you very much, but, you know, some of your followers, they're hard to get along with." So, we're part of Prabhupada's family. And we have a huge, awesome resource of the whole disciplic succession and the mercy of the members of the disciplic succession, because when we become followers of Srila Prabhupada, we're followers of the whole disciplic succession. And what an august assembly of personalities who are just ready with their hands full to bestow blessings, and all we need to do is enter into a relationship with those personalities and plead with them for their blessings. with hundreds of hands that are ready to fill up our personalities, our existence, with their blessings. And that's relationship. And then our services to represent them nicely with those blessings that they've given. And that's our way of life. It's part of a relationship with Krishna. It's a relationship with those that represent Krishna. Is it otherwise? Would we want it otherwise, or is it realistic otherwise? So, receiving guidance, done under expert guidance, these processes of hearing and chanting and remembrance and prayer, that's Prabhupada's purport. That's the implication that Prabhupada wants us to get from this prayer of Shukadeva Goswami about the personality of Godhead. Krishna, it's so wonderful. Just remembering him, just thinking of him, or praying to him, or worshipping him, or hearing about him, or chanting his name, at once can carry us beyond our limitations, our conditionings, the entanglements with sinful reactions. How wonderful. So hearing this message properly inspires great faith and shelter taking, relationship, entering into that relationship and serving. So then he goes into the next sentence, is this impersonal or personal? Even in a devotional way, there are persons, certainly. Just gave some examples, but persons who, they're religious, they accept God, and you know, their idea of God is quite impersonal. This energy force. And it's trendy today, you know, even in monotheistic religions, to think of God like that, an energy force. Or even those that say that he's a person, not just an energy force. Then show them a picture of Krishna. Anyone that's done some book distribution knows what this experience is. So many times when I remember for about a year, we just, four brahmacharis traveled around the country with a van loaded up to the ceiling. You know, one of those cargo vans that there was enough room for our stuff and little pots that we cooked with, and the rest was books. Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna book 1 and then 2 and then 3. So as we were distributing the books, we would, you know, have our thing that we'd say to people, and they'd see the pictures on the cover, and they would go, a common thing, who's that? Such a beautiful picture. Who's that? And the answer was, that's God. And they gesture, they want to give the book back. How can that be God? Then the response is, well, in your tradition, you pray to God as a person, right? Yeah, God's a person. But not that. And then, what is the kind of conception of God as a person? And you look at literatures, often the tracts of that Christians pass out, and you'll see one of two different depictions. Often, God is depicted as a cloud, and in a cloud you see this kind of amorphous face, little indication of, but you know, not really a person, just kind of like a person or something. Or another one is, it looks like a replication of Abraham Lincoln in the Lincoln Memorial, sitting in a big chair, judging people. Like the question yesterday, you know, the vengeful God. He sits in a big chair and, okay, you're good, you can go to heaven, you're bad, you go to hell. Next. Not a person you want to have a relationship with. You know? So God is a person. And the Bhagavatam discloses, of course, that later in the 10th canto, the details of Krishna's personality and his loving exchanges, that's disclosed. But here it's that, you know, he's a person. He's a loving, benevolent person. Not a wrathful, vengeful, you know, tyrant. If you sin, you're going to hell. Burn in hell. Repent for your sin. That stuff never inspired me so much. Because that's not the kind of person I want to have a relationship with. So there's even in the devotional realm, there's, in Prabhupada's language here, impersonal approach, where one offers to the Lord devotional prayers. Or in a personal way. So it's, the message is a personal existence, Bhagavan, feature of the Supreme Lord. And he's not just this inspiring personality. He's awe-inspiring, but because he's Bhagavan, there's awe opulences. But he's very, very personal. And Shukadeva Goswami, it's very significant. It's just after he's answered the question, what are you to do, and what's the subject matter you're to hear about? And now the question is about the creative process. He's disclosing the very personal nature of the Supreme Lord. Because he's got it. He's experiencing that loving relationship. And he's sharing that with Maharishi Pariksit, and he's sharing that with us. And Prabhupada speaks about, in these very powerful processes, hearing, chanting, praying, worshipping, to get the fullness of the potency, one must carefully guard against offenses. Because when there are offenses, the purifying potency is reduced or even eliminated. And therefore, he concludes, very interesting, hearing, therefore, is essential in order to keep oneself strictly on guard against such pitfalls of sins. We need to hear about the importance of becoming free from the reactions of offenses to the Holy Name. Now there's a very relevant subject. Our acharyas teach, even the door opened or the air conditioning on, maybe the door opens. Is there a problem if we open the door? And that window over there, is that window open?
Conditioning is on
for
65
degrees. Okay. Yeah, we're okay. I think we're okay. like Arjuna was induced by Krishna to identify or speak as if he was identifying on the bodily platform of thinking, my happiness in winning the kingdom will be destroyed if I can't enjoy the kingdom with my relatives, and so on. Krishna induced Arjuna to think like that and speak like that so that we could be instructed by Krishna instructing Arjuna. Similarly, great personalities like Bhishma Dev, no question about Bhishma Dev's caliber as a devotee. He's one of the Mahajans confirmed in the Bhagavatam. And yet, Bhishma Dev, Prabhupada explains in the first canto, because of his not protecting Draupadi, was forced to experience what he had to experience of being destroyed. Even he gave the clue how he could be destroyed. But because of that offense to Draupadi, of not protecting Draupadi when she should have been protected, the Pandavas did not, because of the circumstance, they were the slaves of the Kauravas, but Bhishma Dev was in the position of indicating what was to be done, not to be done, and Bhishma Dev choked. Bhishma Dev said, this is too complicated to discern what is appropriate. Vidura spoke, there's no problem understanding what's appropriate. This is inappropriate. But Bhishma Dev didn't take that position. The laws of Dharma are so complicated in this circumstance, I cannot say definitively. And for that he had to die in the bed of arrows. But he was a great devotee, shown by what Krishna did to come in person. Not without even Bhishma Dev requesting it, knowing the heart of Bhishma Dev, and having Bhishma Dev deliver Yudhisthira from his lamentation when even Krishna couldn't deliver Yudhisthira from his lamentation. Krishna wanted to glorify Bhishma Dev, so there'd be no question about his position. Great devotee. Great devotee. And yet, this misfortune came his way. Similarly, our acharyas explain that there are other situations where great souls are example setting induced by the Supreme Lord. Devotees of the Lord are put in difficulty to teach us a lesson. One of those examples is Sita. Why is the, of course there's many levels of all of this, but you know why Sita was abducted by Ravan? He's the goddess of fortune. So, you know, one, there's levels and there's levels and there's levels. This is the classic of the atheist wanting to desire the goddess of fortune without God. The opulence of the Supreme Lord without God. And so, but how could it happen? You know, one question is, why did Ram make a mistake? Why did he leave Sita? He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's the controller of everything and the knower of everything. Why did he leave Sita? Prabhupada was asked that question by some ladies in Hyderabad. Prabhupada said he was showing by example what is the consequence when you become too much attached to a woman. But he's the Supreme Lord. He could have taught that in some other way. Why did he do it that way? Too much attached, you have trouble. That was Prabhupada's answer. He was demonstrating by his own action. Of course, another level was that was part of the Leela to allow for this separation. But it was also to teach another lesson. When Ram went after Marij pursuing the golden deer, and after Ram understood this is not just a golden deer, this is a trick. And so he shot his arrow to kill Mareech, and Mareech called out in a voice that sounded just like Ram's. Lakshman! Lakshman! Help! And Sita heard. Lakshman understood. He's Ram. He doesn't need anybody's help. Just like this evening, I'm going to show a picture presentation of the Kaliya Leela. When Krishna was wrapped in the coils of the Kaliya serpent, the residents of Vrindavan were by the bank of the Jamuna River in great anxiety. Normally it's they're in difficulty and they call for Krishna's help. This is the glory person. Krishna's in difficulty. Who do they call for? Send a messenger to Nanda Maharaj. Nanda Maharaj heard the messenger's news. He slaps his arms. With these arms I will destroy that Kaliya. Mother Jasoda, you just stay here. Don't worry, everything will be all right. Balaram just smiled. Knowing Krishna's having fun. Everything's all right. So Lakshman also understood. Ram's okay. But Sita spoke in such a way that it pained and deeply hurt the heart of Lakshman. You have another motive all along for years in the forest. You've been waiting for this opportunity so you can, apart from Ram, and join me. What a sinful person you are. How could Lakshman have be accused of such a thing? Acharyas explain, because Sita spoke that word, those words. She offended Lakshman in that way. She had to experience being kidnapped by Ravan and in the prison of the Rakshasis for 10 months for speaking words inflicting pain in Lakshman's heart. It's Leela. Sita is flawless, but the Lord enacted a pastime, our acharyas explained, to teach us an important lesson. Vaishnava Parad is serious business. And further, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, one should not think, oh, he's an exalted Vaishnava, therefore he'll be very forgiving. It's okay. Or, he's not such an exalted Vaishnava, he or she. I'm not such an exalted Vaishnav, so it's okay. That further compounds the offense. It's not okay. Sinning on the strength of chanting in addition to offending a devotee of the Lord. I'll just chant and it'll be okay. It's not. We have something very powerful. And you have to handle something very powerful, very carefully. It's powerful enough to at once take us to the relationship in connection with Krishna. And if we're not careful, it can cause a problem. But that doesn't mean stay away from it because it can cause a problem. It means take it in the proper spirit. Very, very important message that we're getting encapsulated here. So, the next verse, text 16, Shukadeva Goswami goes on. Let me offer my respectful obeisances again and again unto the all auspicious Lord Sri Krishna. He's just been asked to speak about creative energy. He's like, soaring in jubilation and exultation about Krishna. This is Shukadeva Goswami. The highly intellectual simply by surrendering unto his lotus feet are relieved of all attachments to present and future existences, and without difficulty progress towards spiritual existence. So all future existences meaning the material side. And at once, without difficulty. So one of the biggest numero uno problems of persons who are endowed with something that's the fruit of past piety is pride. Big problem, pride. It's such a big problem that if you make this example of tar on your hand, how do you get rid of it? You can't, because as soon as you contact it, it's, you got more tar elsewhere. What do you do? Try to become free from pride by trying to be humble, and then one becomes proud about how one is becoming humble. Because the tendency is so strong. And where does that tendency come from? It comes from the conception of who we are. Pride is the conception of what we have, and the conception of who we are is based upon, or upon the conception of who we think we are is what we have, the I and mine conception, in other words. Amanatvam adambitvam. So, humility is such an important item, so that we can become free from pride. And the humility, Maharaj Pritchard is showing us by, Shukadeva Goswami is showing us by his example how to become free from pride. It's very simple, very nice. The how to become free from pride is glorify Krishna. Enter into your relationship with Krishna. Appreciate who is Krishna. So next to Krishna, I'm so very, very tiny, and that's not a problem. If you don't have a relationship problem with Krishna, if you have a relationship problem with another person, it's rooted in your relationship problem with Krishna. Because that person is representing their part and parcel of Krishna. And comparing oneself with that other person, or competing with the other person, or being jealous of the other person, or whatever it is, it's just downstream from the relationship with Krishna problem that we have. Solve that one problem, you've solved all problems. It's not like you don't have to worry about, you know, the relationships that we have with other persons, especially amongst devotees of the Lord. We need to address those, whatever conflicts may exist, on a Krishna conscious platform, on a spiritual platform. So intellectuals and their pride is the message here. So Bahunam Janmanamante Gyanavan Bam Prapadyate Vasudev Sarvamiti Samahatma Sadolava. This is where Prabhupada goes into the confidential, more confidential, most confidential. So knowledge. Knowledge of the soul. Knowledge of the Supreme. Knowledge of the relationship. And then entering into the spirit of that is the culmination of knowledge. The climax of intellectualism is having that relationship fully established and having no other wish for any other shelter but that. And the medium for that is devotees of the Lord, those that represent Krishna. In the purport, Prabhupada quotes three verses from Bhagavad Gita, 1864 through 66. 65, we know, Manmana Bhavamad Bhakto, and 66, Sarvadharmam Pritya Mali Kam Sharanam Praja. The process of surrender, and approaching the process of surrender is this Manmana Bhavamad Bhakto. Approaching the Manmana Bhavamad Bhakto verse is Sarva Guyatamam Bhuyaha. My dear Arjun, you are very dear to me, and therefore, only for your good, I will disclose the most secret part of my instructions. Shh. Become my devotee. Give yourself unto me only, and I promise you full spiritual existence by which you may gain the eternal right of transcendental loving service unto me. And Prabhupada's comment after that quote, persons who are intelligent, I see a number of very intelligent persons here. Oh yes, Maharaj. Persons who are intelligent take serious note of this last instruction of the Lord. Knowledge of the self is the first step. Confidential knowledge, more confidential knowledge. When one attains the stage of God realization, he naturally, voluntarily becomes a devotee of the Lord to render him loving transcendental service. This devotional service to the Lord is always based on love of God and is distinct from the nature of routine service as prescribed in Karma Yoga Gyan Yoga and Gyan Yoga. And even devotional service can be to a degree routine. Now, routine is good in helping to establish the mode of goodness, but hear ye, the message is not just goodness, the message is the relationship with Krishna and entering into that relationship with Krishna. In the Bhagavad Gita there are different instructions for such men of different categories, and there are various descriptions: Varnashram Dharma, Sannyas Dharma, Yati Dharma, renounced order of life, controlling the senses, meditation, so on. But when he fully surrenders unto the Lord to render service unto him out of spontaneous love for him, factually assimilates the essence of all knowledge described in the Vedas. So back to that quote from Bhagavad Gita, the introduction. One who enters into the spirit of this understanding. This is our purpose. Enter into the spirit of it by this submission and surrender. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says it this way: duty and love are on a different platform. And the message that we're getting is love, real devotional service. Here's how Prabhupada says it: this devotional service is always based on love of God. So even when there's regulative devotional service, we should understand the purpose behind it. Because we can do the do's and avoid the don'ts and not connect with the purpose behind it. So connect with the purpose behind it. It's to enter into a loving relationship with Krishna. And it's not, one more time, it's not a one-sided thing. It's, this is what we do. There's the reciprocation that Krishna extends to us. It's a relationship. And it's sublime. It's what we all want. And then we have that relationship. Once again, we're responsible to exhibit the qualities of one who has such a relationship. One who is receiving this descending mercy from Krishna through the disciplic succession. We have to, it's our responsibility. It's a duty, and then more than that, it's a feature of ecstatic love to exhibit the qualities of a devotee, of the kind of person who has received this very special mercy. We can cry, call out to Krishna, please decorate me with those qualities so I can represent you properly. And I can serve you properly. I can be in that relationship with you at all times, in any circumstance of life, as your loving servant. One more time. One who adopts this method very skillfully attains perfection at once in this life. So it's at once what's holding us up. We're attached to things that give us pain and bring suffering and cover our real knowledge and obscure the relationship with Krishna. It's our offenses. It's things that we know but we neglect because we're conditioned and attached. The tar. It's embarrassing. What do we do? You go once again to that position of faith that Sukadeva Goswami is sharing with Maharaj Pariksit. Krishna is so wonderful. If we just approach him in that in the mood of submission and surrender, all those things can be gone at once. The potency is there. It's all in our submission. We have to be recipients of that mercy. And that means for advancing, there has to be an eagerness for that mercy. The eagerness for the relationship with Krishna is not just the gifts. Krishna's got a big gift basket and we want some of those gifts. We want a relationship with Krishna. The gifts come with the relationship with Krishna. And this is only the second candle. Sukadeva Goswami is ecstatic. And that's part of what Prabhupada's appreciation. Real devotional service is ecstatic. It's spontaneous. It's out of love. So the Vaidhi Sarada Bhakti that we're taught through Srimad Bhagavatam and especially through Lord Chaitanya and his followers are very, very munificent disciplic succession. We're being induced to come to that awareness and awakeness of our loving relationship with Krishna through their mercy. And it's not going to happen just by, you know, our own credential. That's foolish. What credential? It's mercy. An eagerness for that mercy. If this is a Gaudiya Vaishnava principle. You read in the prayers of our Gaudiya Vaishnava Acharyas and the songs, they're crying, praying, earnestly begging for this descending mercy of various Acharyas. Okay? Powerful message and consistent message. Eagerness for the mercy of the devotees so that we can enter into the spirit of our loving relationship with Krishna. So this is the same message as the theme from last night. Of course, the audience last night was a different audience, but this is another audience. So that's where that descending mercy comes. The mercy of Krishna comes through those who he empowers to deliver it. And it's not indirect. It's direct. Prabhupada's example, very simple example. As eyeglasses are transparent, the seeing is not obscured by the transparent lens. So without eyeglasses, the deity is there, but the details of the form of the deity I cannot see, but putting on the glasses, then the seeing is direct through the transparent lens of the eyeglasses. In the same way, the medium of the spiritual master is like that, the transparent medium through which Krishna and the mercy of Krishna is perceived. In this way, the method of the cyclic succession is transparent. And without it, our seeing is defective, our capacity to connect with Krishna is defective. It's just not Krishna's system. But it's direct. Some people have this issue. I don't want any intermediary between myself and God. This relationship with God. That's the idea of the Protestant Reformation, because the medium, the Pope, and the King had become Kali-Yugaized, corrupted, and so in debauch, and so they reject it. We don't need this intermediator, direct. But that's not the system. It's not Krishna's system. One certainly needs a pure, transparent medium, but one needs the pure, transparent medium. That's our disciplic succession. And our preceptors in the line of disciplic succession are most merciful. They're very enthusiastic to give this gift. Much more enthusiastic than we are to receive it, because our attention goes to other things besides that real gift. So, Bhagavatam is inducing us. Look for the real thing. This other thing is incidental. Any discussion? Yes, Gaurashakti.
So much facility being provided to encourage that eagerness to work on the relationship and the connection.
Mm-hmm.
And say, if I don't even feel ashamed that I'm not even eager, I'm not even trying to do something with all facility, I don't even feel ashamed that there is not much endeavor part and a lot of slackness and many things. What is, how do I
process that?
And what do I do? And what are the steps one can do?
Well, very simple. We have to work with what we have to work with. And so, I may be at step one or less than step one. Whatever my position is, I have to work with what I have to work with. Receiving that recognition, that acknowledgement that you just expressed, process it by, this is where to receive the fullness, one needs to be way over here, and I'm way over here. And that's reality. Am I attracted to that? That's way over there? Yes. Otherwise, I wouldn't be involved. But I'm way over here. So, let me work with what I have. Let me... That which... You've probably heard me express this message before, but here it comes again. Each of us needs to work from a position of strength. That which gives strength, do that. And from that added strength that you get, you think of what's one step that's a doable step in the direction of where I want to go. And from that position of strength, do that one thing. But do it consistently. One of the messages that I passed on, I think you were here for that class, but something that's good is something you should do regularly. So that, what's that, in addition to that which gives you strength, what's that one thing that you can do that's a step in the right, a doable step in the right direction? And then do it consistently. Consistently, consistently, consistently. And then you consider, what's another doable step? And just step by step from whatever the position is. Now connecting what I just said with what Bhaktivinoda Thakur teaches, progress is a series of small steps in the right direction. So let me and those who I'm associated with together, let me and let us make progress. Series of small steps in the right direction. They don't have to be quantum steps, they can be small steps. And that's progress. And when you're making progress, what do you feel? Not only feel good, you feel the Krishna connection more strongly. That's the real. So there's the egoism, I did it. I overcame the obstacle. And that's egoism. But more important, far more important, is the reciprocation with Krishna that you feel. The closer to Krishna feeling. That's very encouraging. Whatever it is. Doesn't have to be, you know, doesn't have to be big, and it doesn't have to be showy, ostentatious, and hey, everybody check it out. But something that you can share in confidential ways with others, you know, this is, you share in confidence, my relationship with Krishna has just undergone some transformation, and I'm feeling closer to Krishna. Not in boasting, but in, you know, Gunya Makyati Prichati. That's important also. It's Krishna like that when the devotees in confidence disclose confidential things. Most confidential things is one's relationship with Krishna. You know, you may want to reserve that for your most confidential friends and associates, but doing that is an also very important part of another step. It's, and it should be done in the spirit, ideally, that for it's pleasing to Krishna. It's not filling a vacancy in my heart. It's, you know, I want, on a category list of I wants, but it's, I want a relationship with Krishna, and this is pleasing to Krishna, so I'll do it because it's pleasing to Krishna. And that satisfaction is different than, you know, I want a friend, and so this is something that fills that vacancy. I want a friend vacancy. It's a loving relationship with Krishna. Hey, Radha, you got something? I thought I saw your hand go up. Huh? Okay. Is that okay? Yes.
Maharaj, in the context of acting in our relationship with Guru and Krishna, again with the mercy of Guru and Krishna, there is a lot of awareness. I sense a lot of awareness in me about the attachments that are coming in the way repeatedly of being able to act in that relationship. And while that awareness is there is also this realization that it's really impossible for me to do it. It has somehow mercy has to come and pull me out of that attachment. And so
it's exciting, isn't it?
So in spite of
then what happens? What happens at that? You're at the threshold of entering into another consciousness, and then what happens? You go back the other way?
I do. I go back the other way.
Lament.
Because the passion comes up, the attachment comes up in a very overwhelming way, and it's, at that point of time, I'm just trying to understand what is Krishna trying to indicate. I mean, the awareness is there, and And here's
what he's indicating. He loves you. And he's giving you a realization so that you can take the step, but he won't force you to take the step.
And what would that step be?
That you reach both arms like a child reaching for a mother. And when the mother sees the child reaching, the mother knows what that means. What does the mother do? It's a no-brainer. Everybody knows what mothers do. Just do that. Energetically. Devotionally. Guru and Krishna. And when Krishna does, just like when the parents extend and hold the child, what does the child feel? And that's what you'll feel. You'll feel Krishna's embrace. But he's not going to force you. It's love. He won't force you. He's brought you to that. You know, so many things, prior to where you are now, that, you know, that was just an unknown commodity, or an unknown reality. You know, the patterns and the attachments and the stuff. Act in the relationship. The relationship is help! Mommy! The mother goes running. So we're not, again with Gaura Shakti's question or the premise in mind, Krishna knows our limitation better than we know our limitation. Krishna knows how we're stuck in certain patterns and better than we understand how we're stuck in patterns. He's not judging us. He's loving us. He brought us to that recognition. So a little step. And it's the preliminary of further steps and further steps and further steps and further steps and further steps. But when we feel secure in that little step, we feel the reciprocation of Krishna, we're ready to take, to trust that relationship. And to feel the relationship and to grow in that relationship. One of the images, both in Jagannath Puri, when Lord Chaitanya entered into the Jagannath temple, and when Lord Chaitanya saw Chatak Parvat and thought it was Govardhan, the same thing. Krishna, his arms outstretched, running like the wind. And he fell to the ground unconscious, just absorbed in reaching for Krishna. So we're not on that stage. We're in the, you know, much, but one step at a time. Madhavendra Puri was ecstatic love for Krishna. And he came. Krishna came. He didn't disclose who he was, but he came and brought him a pot of milk. And then when he realized that that was Krishna, and I didn't even recognize Krishna. He's on this, not our platform, he's on this other platform. Ecstatic love for Krishna platform. The Lord of my life.
then he recognizes. Don't demonstrate. But that's just part of his ecstatic ecstasy, love. Then he dozed off, and the same Krishna appeared. It took him to where he was in his deity form, by his hand, in his dream, to where Gopal, in his deity form, was, and requested him to worship him. I've been waiting for you. I've been waiting for you. So, it's a grand adventure down the road. Just enter into that relationship. And what does it do? All the stuff that's back there, just Mama Maya Dorothea is gone. And we don't need to feel ashamed or guilty or bad because, you know, it's taking so long to do that. Krishna's not judging. He doesn't find his looking at his watch saying, "Look, you better do this or I'm out of here." Not like that. Lifetimes Krishna's been waiting. He's very loving and very patient. Very eager for the gift of loving reciprocation. That's his nature. Someone else? Yes.
In relation to Mataji's question, she said that she realized that it takes the descending mercy to get out of that stage.
Yes, it does.
How do I come to that realization?
By Krishna's grace. By making sincere efforts. You hear the message, and you strive, and you'll strive, and you'll strive. Let's take the simple thing where the mind doesn't go from the holy name, and you're chanting, and you're trying, and you're trying, and you're intensely trying, and sustained effort of trying, and trying, and trying, and the mind is like a monkey, just jumping here and there, and I can't do it. But the instruction is there to do it. It's not going to be possible unless Krishna makes it possible. There's the realization. But it takes, so back to both of these questions again, not just her question. The incremental step is you have to begin from where you are. The beginning is, there's an instruction. I trust the instruction and the instructor. Let me apply it. It's in the application process. And then you apply it and you realize I'm getting nowhere. And you realize I'm getting nowhere because I don't have any real sense of gratitude in my heart for the instructor. It's not a mechanical process, it's a devotional process. So let me go back and fix that problem, the relationship with the instructor problem. So I'm not just on this mechanical platform. Someone else had their hand up? Yeah.
I feel a lot, like I feel kind of guilty because of my chant was not that good. When I just became a devotee, I had a very amazing experience. I was in a very dangerous situation when I was kind of dragged to the forest and couldn't be healed. And I didn't know like what to do. And I started chanting mantra, Hare Krishna mantra, new mantra at the time. And it was really true, like sincere. And the person couldn't move, you know, so it was stuck. And I could really like feel the expression of health. And I was safe. And now I still cannot chant much, and I was always thinking, why I can't kind of, you know, pray the same kind of sincere, like, feeling.
Well, you know the answer. You know the answer. The textbook answer is easy. You want to say what the textbook answer is? Is why the chanting that we did, and for the sake of the recording, the chanting that we at one time did where there was this amazing feeling of Krishna's reciprocation, and now so much more chanting and that feeling of Krishna's reciprocation. We're not experiencing that feeling. And what's the reason? Offenses in chanting. Before you chanted, there were no offenses because there was no chanting. After chanting, then some offenses in chanting. And so, anarthas arise due to offenses in chanting. Now we have, you know, Krishna consciousness level 2, which is avoiding offenses while chanting. Yeah. We've all had, I can tell you my experience, it was ecstatic. It propelled me, you know, through the sky and came in for a landing in a temple. Thirty-five years later, here I am. So, you know, this seems to be a sequence of these questions, and we'll go back to what Madhusudan said. How to get that feeling again? How to neutralize those offenses besides, like, just doing a Gatling gun, okay, can't do this one, can't do that one, can't do that one, can't do that one, can't do that one, and you're not attentive to the holy name because you're attentive to can't do this one, can't do that one. Start with a deep feeling of gratitude to Srila Prabhupada for sacrificing in the way that he sacrificed to give the holy name to the whole world. And your life was totally changed, touched, deeply changed, and continuing on because of there's something that you're experiencing, not just that long time ago early chanting experience. There's something that you're experiencing. Enter into deep feelings of gratitude for what Prabhupada has given, the opportunity that he's given. Not just for that one experience or for changing the quality of your life, but the real gift is to enter into the loving relationship with Krishna. It's Lord Chaitanya's gift, Prabhupada's his messenger, but it's just as good to glorify Prabhupada as the messenger of Lord Chaitanya's message, since he's our founder acharya. And your spiritual master for representing him and giving you that inspiration and his example by his own life of surrender to Prabhupada. Feelings of gratitude will soften the heart and carry you once again into those feelings of entering into the holy name with full surrender, offenseless chanting. Very simple thing, very important thing. Deep feelings of gratitude. And you have those feelings of gratitude, I know. I don't know you super well, but when I hear you speak, I know that you have those feelings of gratitude. Go, move, with, massage those feelings of gratitude. More and more and more. And the deeper feelings of the holy name, the sense of connecting with Krishna through his holy name, will strengthen also. Someone else? Yes.
Maharaj, talking about attachment.
About attachment. Okay.
If attachment is something, you can let go, but you won't have desire or motivation to let go.
If you have a...
rephrase it. If attachment is something, you can let go.
If the attachment is something, then you can let go, or...
Don't have a desire or motivation to let go. Or
even if you don't have a desire or motivation to let go?
There are two parts for
you. You asked me, you turned left and I went right.
Attachment is something you can let go,
yes,
but you don't have a desire to let go. Maybe, you know, now before coming into Krishna consciousness, okay, now you know that these things are attachments, like attachment to whatever. But now you know you won't let go. But you can let go even if you desire to do it.
It's just like Ananda Bandada's question. You reach a certain point where you recognize this is attachment, and I know I should let go, but I don't really want to let go. But I know I should let go. I don't really want to let go. You have this cusp. You're on the edge of the fence, and you can go this way or that way, and just stay on the fence. That indecision is a decision. I'm choosing to not let go. I'm not choosing to let go, but I'm not choosing to not let go.
that's one thing, but the next part is, I sincerely want to let go it, but it keeps on going.
Okay. So now what to do? So there's a theme in all of these questions. And, you know, it's part of the Anarjana Vritti process, and just, you know, I would want to say to you that's very similar to the response that I gave to Gaura Shakti's question. If you take that question and apply that to the situation you just described, go back and assess, where am I getting this strength? On my spiritual path, where is their strength coming? Let me really work on that so I can get more strength. Then with that strength, take a little inventory of some of the stuff that, where there's attachment, and take one that's at the bottom of the list. It's real easy to let go of if you just apply yourself. Let me work on that. This is like a bhakti program. So any of you that are preaching, consider this model. You meet somebody. So this is, it's personal or interpersonal. You meet somebody that's taking an interest in Krishna consciousness. Or say just, a bhakta joins the temple and he's in the bhakta program. So the bhakta program leader gets to know that bhakta. What are the things that you like in Krishna consciousness? Let's do a lot of that. You like prasadam? A lot of prasadam. You like kirtan? A lot of kirtan. You like studying Prabhupada's books? Let's study whatever it is you like, let's do a lot of that. Harinam Sankirtan. Whatever it is, let's do a lot of that. Now, what are your attachments? Let's go make a real list. Make a, you know, written list. These are the attachments. Which one of these things do you think would be easiest for you to let go of? Are you sure it's easy for you to let go of? You just apply yourself. Then let's work on that one. On the strength that you have, work on that one. It's easy to let go. Victory. It's not me, it's Krishna's victory. Okay, now let's keep that going for some time. And keep in the back of your mind, what's another thing that you can let go? Then you'll find where your deeper attachments are. And they're like stains, it's really hard for them to go. Now, when you have a stain, what do? Little bit, and gradually the stain goes. You can feel defeated if you're looking at this whole big inventory list, and so a step at a time. What I'm describing to you is the approach of an incrementalist. Step at a time. Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Progress is a series of small steps in the right direction. Go ahead.
In the process of that deeper attachments, trying to remove it, getting frustrated is a positive direction? Or?
No. No. Getting frustrated is surrendering to ignorance. The mode of ignorance is characterized by frustration, anger, despondency, destruction. Mode of ignorance, don't go there. Not positive. Go back to, this is the position of strength. This is a very persistent attachment. Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, it may take 30 years to remove a persistent, unwanted habit. Excuse me, 3 years. No, it's okay. I would recommend, as you are doing, and so this message is more for the devotees in general than for you in particular, but work closely with someone who is a very kind, compassionate spiritual guide in your life. You have that relationship. It's natural. It's formalized. Work with that. You'll get added strength from that relationship. And the added strength from that relationship is this. Krishna is pleased. Guru and Krishna are pleased. That's the added strength. Clear? And so it's Krishna's strength that's helping you to do that which alone you cannot do. Now this is back to Madhusudan's question. How do I get the realization that alone I can't do it? Try it and you get the realization. Sincerely strive and you get the realization. I can't do this alone. That's a good realization. And who would want to do it alone anyway? Because on the other side, you're alone. Go that distance with a loving relationship. So on the other side, you have a deeper loving relationship. This, you know, again, referring to the response I gave to Guru Shakti. We want those loving relationships for different reasons. The spiritual reason is that it's pleasing to Krishna. We're not on the material, we're not on the spiritual platform, we're on the material platform. We want what we want. We're not on the platform of wanting because Krishna wants. But if you cultivate like that, little step at a time, you'll get there. That my life is for what Krishna wants. And when you have that relationship with Krishna, then you can be Krishna's instrument, completely free from false ego. Pride doesn't enter into the heart. Fear doesn't enter into the heart. Hesitancy doesn't enter into the heart. Complacency doesn't enter into the heart. It's gone. Because of that loving relationship with Krishna. It's the platform of freedom. And whatever Krishna wants is possible. Because he wants it. If there's an obstacle, it's just my own false ego. I own impurities. That's the only obstacle. I want to get on the other side of that obstacle, but I can't do it without Krishna's help. And Krishna provides resources. And those resources represent Krishna. It's part of my relationship with Krishna. So that there's obstacles, in one sense, that's great. It gives me an opportunity to enter into relationship with Krishna. Thank you, Krishna. Because he's extending the relationship. It's right there. Like, you know, right in front of the end of our nose. It's right there. everything that we need to go the whole distance, right there. Step at a time. No frustration? Relationship with Krishna? Yes. Act in the relationship with Krishna. If I'm not acting in relationship with Krishna, I'm going to feel frustrated, because what I really want is a relationship. I want a loving relationship.
Instead of frustration is lamentation is
The Vaishnava mood of regret is wholesome. Excessive regret is ignorance. It steals, it robs your energy. It covers Krishna, and you become the center. That's ignorance. We're not the center. Oh, I can't do it. I've tried so many times. Krishna's gone, and I'm at the center. Maya's trick. Mode of ignorance. Say no to the mode of ignorance and say yes to Krishna. And share confidential disclosure with those who are your confidential associates. It's part of the relationship, part of the resource that Krishna has given for him to pick us up at this ocean of birth and death, where we're drowning in lamentation and frustration and so on. Yes.
So Maharaj, as I understand, there are two factors responsible for taking us back home, back to Godhead. The first is our sincere effort
and mercy.
And the second is mercy, yes, of Guru Maharaj and the senior Vaishnavas. And whatever we lack in our efforts, the mercy sort of compensates for.
Well, wait a minute. I haven't read that in Prabhupada's book.
What I'm getting at is, like, what is the minimum?
Here's how you maximize mercy. Let's go that way. Back to Ananda Vrindavan's question and response. Helplessness, dependence, reaching out to Krishna. In Prabhupada's phrase, when we're chanting, like a child calling for the mother, we call for Krishna. So that's not the effort of, I'm going to do it. Look out, here I come. Got my PhD and I've done so many things and I'm going to do it. Because it's effort, I got to make effort. That's pointing to you, it says, you know, whatever it is that one has accomplished. It's not, so obviously with exaggeration, but it's not that kind of effort. It's the effort of sincerity. Sincerely striving. At the same time, the mood of that sincere striving is the mood of dependence, and as we spoke yesterday morning, distinct from that dependence is independence. The spirit of independence cripples the spirit of devotion, because devotion is with a relationship. So, you know, one can have a relationship with a husband or wife, or a friend and friend, or a spiritual master and disciple, or devotee and Krishna. There's so many relationships. So acting within the relationship means I want that relationship. I'm endeavoring not to control the variables of the relationship, but to enter into the relationship. But there's got to be mercy on the other side, because I'm very limited. And that's part of relationship. It's part of a loving relationship. And when we, all relationships can experience, in all relationships, we can experience the sublime spirit-soul to spirit-soul relationship, as long as the relationship with Krishna is in the center of that relationship. And when Krishna disappears from the center, then there's power struggles and all kinds of issues that arise in a relationship if Krishna is not at the center. Doesn't mean, therefore, we should avoid relationships. It's we should cultivate our relationship with Krishna in this striving with a mood of dependence. And what we're reaching for is mercy. It's an eagerness to receive that mercy of Krishna, which is his side of the relationship, but my side is the side of service. And but in the course of my service, I realize my limitation. I'm very tiny. And I'm dependent. Anyone else? Yes. Yes, after.
When we practice Krishna consciousness, we get so many realizations.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to share that with other devotees and during preaching.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, like, I was thinking about, like, we have realization stage during chanting. Is that a really real realization that we can share, or is that a trick of mind that we have to be careful about not thinking too much about? Like, is my question is, does it matter at what time the realization comes? Does it matter, or
no.
Is it Krishna gives realization at a specific
time? At different times, just in the course of service. At any time, Krishna can do.
Even during chanting?
Even during chanting. At any time. Including even during chanting. Does that satisfy?
In the life of Bhishma Dev,
yeah.
He was like, I mean, I'm looking into the timeline of his life, the four situations he's put into, where, like, one time he had to renounce his, he's a powerful Kshatriya, but he was, he had to take a vote not to be the king. And then there was a second situation where Draupadi asks him, asks a question, and though he was a Mahajan, he was not able to answer the question.
Yes.
But yet he's a pure devotee.
Yes.
And then the third situation is he had to fight a war against, against the Pandavas, and of course it's explained with the other Rasa Tattva that his mood is in chivalry. And in the fourth situation where Krishna praises him by coming before him by satisfying his desire, and also he gives him an opportunity to satisfy Yudhishthira questions that no one could convince Yudhishthira. Now my question is this the nature of a person who is in pure love, which is like you can't explain what is happening with the person, like for example when
right. That's right. He's submissive to Krishna. So each of the things that Bhishma Dev did, we can stand back and the little pieces and look at the whole picture, and everything he did was induced. And in fact, I gave him as an example, as was Sita, as an example of induced by Krishna. Bhishma Dev did what Krishna induced him to do because he's completely submissive to Krishna. The master of his mind and senses and his life. So even when he didn't speak up on behalf of Draupadi, that his, let's say his intelligence was blocked, it was induced by Krishna, that he's a Mahajan and he can't discern what is Dharma in a circumstance that's obvious what's Dharma. Because, you know, there's technicalities, but there's technicalities are technicalities and principles are principles, and he has the capacity given by Krishna to discern, but he couldn't. Or Arjun, attached to the outcome of the battle based on relatives and bodily considerations. Or after Arjun went with Krishna back to Dwaraka and Krishna had departed, Arjuna was with the wives of Krishna and he couldn't check the cowherdsmen with their sticks because the potency was given by Krishna. But all of these things are just to show different lessons of life. And Krishna likes to show lessons of life through his devotees. It brings the spotlight on those devotees. And it takes the pure devotees to help us understand those situations properly.
My question is, there are two things. One is Dharma and there is Bhagavad Dharma. I mean, like
channels. Yeah, yeah.
And this person is acting simultaneously on both of these channels. Like,
yeah. Well, he's always acting on the platform of a personality like Bhishma is acting on the platform of Bhagavad Dharma. And so there may be some discrepancy in Dharma, and we should not be fault finders and say, why is there a discrepancy? Mm-hmm. Why is a induced him to do like that?
Now my question is also, like, in this today's real world, they can be people like that who might be working.
It's possible.
And then
it's possible. It's possible. One should be very, 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 very cautious about projecting people to be in that position. Mm-hmm. Where are the Bhishma days of this time? But is it possible? Sure, it's possible.
And so we should only, like, when we are trying to understand these kinds of things, we should only go through someone who is
like, that's right. That's right.
That's it.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
You mentioned during the class that when having the knowledge is certainly important, and then acting on the knowledge, the application is also important. But the essence is the relationship.
Yes.
So by that, does it mean that the application should not be mechanical, but there should be?
That's right. But now we'll go back to, you know, some of the earlier questions. Supposing that's the platform that we're on. Hmm. What can you do? You work with what you have. But it's part of the instruction, the training, is to understand these conceptually. That's really the goal, is a loving relationship with Krishna, to the medium of the loving relationship with Guru and Krishna. So doing the do's and avoiding the don'ts, applying all of that, that's good, and it's that keep going with the understanding that it's the relationship of love and service. Duty may precede love, but the goal is love. And so process that one. Yeah.
Maharaj, from your always answers, it seems we need to give a specific time for introspection and then cultivating gratitude.
And that's called all the time. The time is we should be regularly introspecting. You know, ideally, I use the phrase, I don't know if it's a standard phrase, parallel intelligence. Just like, you know, you're in university and so you're studying things that do not resonate with our scriptures. There's some that have nothing to do with our scriptures, some that directly contradict our scriptures, especially in the fields of science and history and so many things. So, should you just give up your studies or understand this is the process of material life, and from a Vedic perspective, you're processing, this is devoid of God consciousness, this is the result, and I'm feeling very grateful that I have the process of Krishna consciousness. I can understand the process of nescience and transcendence side by side. So as you're going through things, yes, it's good to have reflective time. Even better is you regularly reflect it. That's, maybe you weren't here for that discussion. That's the mode of goodness. When you don't just interact with what's coming at you, but you reflect. Mode of goodness. You consider. In light of scripture particularly, this is what's happening. And then you can be in a neutral position, fortified by knowledge. And that's just neutral, that's not devotional. Neutral. In the face of duality, seeing through the lens of scripture. And seeing through the lens of spiritual master, because the spiritual master has trained me in scripture. So, I can be neutral in that reflective mode. And introspecting, just like Ananda Vrindavan was describing, you know, processing how what's happening is impacting on me, on my processors, my thoughts and my feelings, and you know, my priorities, and how I'm making decisions. At least, yes, in intervals of time, introspection, but ideally in an ongoing fashion, simultaneously introspective and interactive. And once again, doing so in the confidential disclosures with others that are your mentors or dear friends and you know, confidential devotees. Again, not just because it helps to process everything or to be a better introspector, but it's pleasing to Krishna when that happens. That help?
Related, I find I do not give sufficient time for...
I feel I don't give sufficient time for introspection.
Introspection, and especially you said cultivating gratitude for mentors that they have done this for me. So what could be a practical...
Take some time each day, or you know, in intervals of time in the week, or you know, schedule it. For example, some devotees, because they've been encouraged to do so, keep a gratitude journal. You've heard that one before, right? You heard what a diary is, right? Dear diary. So it's something that you're writing not for the benefit of anyone but yourself. That's introspection time. Dear diary. You reflect on your experiences and express, particularly for the sake of cultivation of gratitude, you make entries. I am receiving, or in the past I have received, or because of what I received I'm now able to understand that this situation that just happened today, I was able to handle it in Krishna consciousness. I'm feeling very grateful for those who equipped me and prepared me for that. Etc., etc., etc. And so it's massaging or exercising the gratitude muscle. It becomes strong muscle, gratitude, just by exercise. Right? Schedule it. The point was previously made that if there's something that's good, do it regularly. So you don't need to be told. If you understand, it's good, and I'm not sufficiently doing it, do it with regularity. Make it a part of your sadhana. For example, if you're really busy on weekdays and weekends, you spend block off some time on weekends. I'm going to make entries into my gratitude journal and physically do it. Not just, you can reflect, but you write it down. It makes it stronger, stronger impression. Or each day, make one entry. You know, you have to make one entry, you may have to sit there looking at a blank page for half an hour. But, you know, that's one possibility. And after you do it, then it's, you're not looking at a blank page for half an hour. It's, your mind is flooded with different, you just can't wait till you get to your gratitude world. You can make so many entries. When it becomes part of your life. Prabhupada's teaching is by regular practice, something becomes second nature. Very simple phrase. By regular practice, something becomes, so we have our nature. My nature is, I'm not taking sufficient time for introspection. It's just a conditioned state, but that's my nature. Okay? Now I want to have another, I want another nature to replace that nature. Just practice it something. It becomes second nature. It becomes my nature. By design. Okay. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada.